Hi, and welcome to episode 105 of the Machine Ethics Podcast. This time, we're talking for our second time with Tim El-Sheikh. This video was recorded on the 7th of November, 2025. I was keen on talking to Tim again, but this time on the concept of AI bubble and the possibility of it bursting. Tim and I also talk about podcasting, previous AI startups and the history of OpenAI, AI use cases, the safety concerns of generative AI, the ROI of AI, and why do we need all these data centers anyway, the logic of replacing human workers, the almost new gold rush associated with collecting public's data and prompts fed into LLMs, and kind of like the possible data oligarchies that this is producing, the erosion of truth, and much more. If you want to find more episodes, you can go to machine-ethics.net. You can contact us at hello@machine-ethics.net. You can follow us on Blue Sky, machine-ethics.net, Instagram, Machine Ethics Podcast, and YouTube at machine-ethics. If you can, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/machine-ethics. Thank you and hope you enjoy. Tim, hi, welcome to the podcast, or should I say welcome back to the podcast, as you are on episode 63, AI Readiness. So thanks for coming back. If you could please tell me about who you are and what do you do?
Oh, wow. Well, thanks for having me back. It's been, 4 years? Like we just chatted before we recorded, 4 years ago. Jesus, happened, hasn't it? So what am I now? Because I'm doing so many things these days. I suppose now I can say I'm a podcaster, thanks to you. It's your fault. No, I love it. I love it. I mean, we could probably talk about it, but I think it's great. I launched the CEO Retort podcast in November 2024. So we're approaching 1 year anniversary. And the idea behind it was to basically challenge all the nonsense and the stupid narratives that you hear from the likes of Sam Altman and Elon Musk, etc., when it comes to AI, frankly, anybody when it comes to AI. And the reason, what qualifies me to do that is that I am a tech entrepreneur since 2002. Luckily, I've been involved in AI before AI was a thing. I'm part of the same cohort as DeepMind back in the day at Google campus. So that's in the early 2010s. So Google decided that they wanted to bring all of the AI brains from around the country into that ecosystem. Mm. So even though we didn't have an office at Google campus, but it was more like we were just gathered there a lot. But then eventually, once they allowed companies to move in, I moved in there in 2014, I think. And it was an amazing experience because, again, that was literally the who of AI today. Like, literally, obviously, we got DeepMind, but there are guys in there that are behind the AI at TikTok, behind the AI at Microsoft, behind the AI at Meta, right? So I always like to make the joke that I am literally one of the people that brought AI the way you see it today. So I don't know if I should apologize or say you're welcome. But in my case, I made a conscious decision that I do not want to be involved in consumer-facing AI ever. And I can explain why that if you want later on. So my focus has always been business to business. So especially in science, because my main background is in biotech. I'm a biomedical scientist by trade, which is interestingly, that's how I discovered AI. Because in the 90s, people used AI at the time through bioinformatics to decode animal genomes. And I studied genetics. Mm. So to me, it was like, whoa, okay, it's an interesting combination. Because by that point, AI to me was basically something that you see in games. And I'm an avid gamer. I know you're an avid gamer as well. And I thought, wow, actually, you could do something more serious than just gaming. You can decode genomes. Whoa. So that's how I kind of got into AI and I got into all the, again, I wish I could say that this is all part of a plan. I'm just a lucky son of a gun, because like as I said, I've experienced the true value of AI. So it's not about chatbots and all that garbage, but AI that truly is revolutionary in scientific applications. Mm. Of course, we've seen that with DeepMind and other great guys too. But also my first startup was an ad network where we built AI recommendation systems, which is what you see on social media. Again, I never knew that would be a thing. But of course, when we heard that social media companies want to use these recommendation systems as the content arbiter or a way to replace human editorial process, that was the point where when I was at Google was saying, okay, that's complete utter garbage. That's not going to work. So everything that is happening today, people like me called out over 10 years ago. Again, not because I'm a genius, because I just know how this thing works. And as it happens, when I was at Google campus, the thing that I was building, the reason what attracted us towards Google and that community is that we were building language models at the time to fight misinformation online, which was also already a thing. Did I know that there will be large language models and ChatGPT, whatever? No. But so somehow, like, the plan is just aligned where I kind of found myself in this situation where, you know, okay, I am in a position to call out all of the nonsense and claims that are made. And yeah, here I am. It kind of made me burn a lot of bridges as well, because I had VCs at the time and investors, and they kind of not happy with what I'm doing because I'm calling out everybody. So 2022 was kind of the year where I just had to, like, exit, leave all that world. And it was kind of a crazy year, because that was the year where I lost my parents as well, which is horrendous. So it kind of changed my perspective on life. And of course, we were all recovering from the pandemic as well. So it was like, I felt, you know what? Like, at the time I was running a company called, well, I'm still running, actually, still alive, Nebulae, which is how you and I connected. And we talked mostly about Nebulae, that, you know, when we spoke. But it was like all about how do we really change people's perception about AI, the fact that AI can do the certain things that we know that it's really, really great at, and stop pretending that it can do all the Hollywood nonsense that is being pushed at them. But people think that AI can do the Hollywood nonsense. So I felt like, you know, I kind of started, you know, I'm approaching 50. So I felt, okay, assume I'll be alive until 100. So I thought, okay, what do I do with the second half of my life? Okay, I'm going to campaign for ethics, digital ethics, ethical AI, responsible AI. And of course, now AI is part of literally everything that you see around us. So I look for things, equality, women's equality, digital equality, human rights, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I think if people see my podcast, you can see the sort of conversations I'm having and the kind of people I'm bringing. Literally, it's everybody across the board, because AI is impacting every single element of our lives. And that's who I am. It's a bit long, so.
that was epic. Thank you, Tim. Yeah.
Thank you.
I feel it's funny, because I think I must have crossed your path, because I had a startup in 2013 or something, and we would be often in Google Campus, but down in the bowels, you know, in the cafe at the bottom, because we didn't have any money and that sort of thing. So we must have, you know, events and stuff. I must have seen you around and gone, oh man, that guy's doing some cool stuff, you know.
I tried to avoid the cafe, actually. It was so busy. It was so packed all the time.
Yes,
so
it was mental. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It was fun, no, because they held a few events there, but yeah, but most of the time, yeah, we're sort of upstairs in the closed doors, as it were.
Yes, exactly, because you had proper offices up there, and it was a relative free for all downstairs, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, the cafe was free. I mean, that's the thing, they wanted it to be open for everybody, which I think is great. You know, I think, I mean, again, Google is the one, like, people talk about, you know, who is the key force in the world of AI. It's always been Google. And I would argue it still is today, despite OpenAI is getting all the attention, whatever. Mm-hmm. But Google is really the powerhouse of AI, which is, to some extent, once I can say it's a good thing, but also it's not necessarily a great thing. And if people if you want to go back to history, I mean, OpenAI was formed as a direct antidote to Google. So it's crazy that now OpenAI turned into the actual villain itself. So
yeah. They drifted far from where they began, though, right? It's a very different beast. I mean, I hooked you in today because I was like, Tim, you're doing a lot on LinkedIn, and it'd be really great to talk to you about like AI and this concept, right? I'm going to put it out there, of the AI bubble that we're in. And I'm interested in that because I see it as this economic thing that's happened, right? People putting a lot of money and a lot of credence into this new wave of AI, which was probably kind of heralded back in 2023. I don't know, with ChatGPT coming out.
November 22.
Yes. Yeah. And it suddenly, like, you know, making it a viable thing for people. This idea of the transformer network, LLMs, suddenly blew up. We could obviously talk about some of the other stuff that you were talking about, but I'd like to just kind of kick us off with, like, what do you think about that? Are we in this AI bubble, and is it going to burst? And what does that look like? You know, if we are witnessing kind of, you know, another dot-com boom and bust, or like another bust for this AI technology that we are spending so much money on, or people are.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question, because even was, you know, actually even you and I talked about the AI bubble, I think back in 2014, right? When you came to my podcast, and it was quite obvious at the time, because what you tend to see with bubbles is that a market, especially investors, get overly excited about this new thing that is emerging, whatever it might be, right? So obviously we had the dot-com, of course, then we had crypto and so on. And then what tends to happen, people just overhype and overpromise what it can achieve and so on. And then eventually, you know, all the money is spent, and then they realize, okay, it was all complete nonsense. Then the whole bubble just explodes. And then the grown-ups, if you like, take over and they start saying, well, actually, look, the technology itself is fine, but this is what can actually be used, or how we can deploy it in the real world in a productive way, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But AI, and to be honest with you, I would say maybe in 2022, that was kind of obvious that it was happening.
And I think it was 2024, because I think you said 2014 earlier. So I was like, that we are.
Oh, sorry, yeah, 24. Yeah. Sorry, 24. So I think it was kind of obvious that the bubble started to form. For me, in my eyes, it was maybe towards the end of 2023, because at the beginning, I mean, for those of us involved in AI, GPT was already out there, so you could have access to it and so on. But I was very lucky that with my company Nebulae, we actually had early. I mean, I don't know if you saw in the news. I think it was in January, February 2023, Microsoft went public and said, "Hey, you know, now we've got GPT on Azure, and we have a hand group of companies that is like they've been invited to access it and play with it." So we were one of those companies. You know, it's a very good technology. It's legit. And in fact, it's one of the things that we wanted to do with my previous company at Google at the time, which is, you know, we were building language models. So it's like, how do you build knowledge from all the corpus of data that you can get? And how do you, you know, how do you use smart search to find the information that you need, et cetera, et cetera? So what GPT has done so brilliantly, I think, is the fact that it made it easier for you to find that information through that conversational interface. So for me, LLMs, they're fantastic. I suppose you're one of the geeks, right? Like for many, many, many years, those of us involved in tech in general, the fantasy that we had was that we wanted to be able to have a conversation with machines, right? Like we wanted to talk to machines. Instead of clicking and typing, you can just tell it what you want it to do, right? That was always the dream. And to me, GPT was that dream. Like it was happening. And I felt that's amazing. As a conversational user interface, amazing. But this is as far as it went, as far as I'm concerned. And till that point, no one was talking. I mean, opening out, we're talking about AGI, but again, AGI was a concept that's been around since 2002. And it was like, yeah, there was loads of iterations. It was like, again, it's a fantasy. Nobody took it seriously. But the fact that with time, people started to look at generative AI in general as this panacea or this thing that could be used as a therapist. Now, of course, a biomedical scientist, I'm like, what are you talking about? Right? Oh, you can start using it as a companion. And they started coming out with all these complete bizarre claims towards the end of 2023. That was the point where you could start to see, okay, what the hell is going on here? Right? And when you and I, actually, again, when we spoke soon after Apple announced Apple Intelligence. And I made the point to you at the time that to me, Apple were the only company, Apple were the sensible ones where effectively they were saying, you know, forget all of the AI nonsense. Basically, AI is there to help you enhance your capabilities on the phone. But the other key thing as well that they were pushing for, that AI has to stay on your device, right? So it's on-device AI, so therefore it's more private, etc. And again, this, none of that is new, by the way. This is the kind of stuff that we were talking about for well over a decade in terms of what AI, consumer AI, really, really looks like. Now, to me, I always, like I said earlier, that the reason I did not go into consumer AI, firstly, because I've always been a big believer that people are not ready for AI as consumers, right? And AI in itself is not safe enough for us to put it out there. And I'm not the only one who's been saying this. I mean, even Mo Gawdat from Google, he was saying the same thing as well.
But are you referring to like the just the large language models aren't necessarily ready
generally, any kind of AI.
Yeah.
All AI. It's a very powerful, it's like saying, you know, should we give people access to the nuclear power plant, you know, right? So that sort of thing. I mean, it's not there yet. Like to have that direct access to AI, to me, that was always a very big problem. But the other thing from the commercial side of it, it's ridiculously expensive because like if you want people to use AI models, any kind of AI models, like the compute, the cost of compute is always, have always been really, really high. Even 10 years ago. 10 years ago, we had massive bottlenecks. And to me, I think the biggest revolution, if people want to talk about revolution right now, it's the compute. What Microsoft and NVIDIA have done is revolutionary. I mean, if I wish we had some of that stuff 10 years ago. I mean, like life would have been so much easier. But it's still not cheap. It's not cheap enough for you to say, hey, let's just put this out there so everybody can use it like they use a search engine, whatever. Well, no. And we are seeing what's happening with the costs, the rising costs at OpenAI and all the other companies. So once you start seeing, you know, putting that all of that together, what I started to see towards the end of 2023, that the bubble was forming. Now, the one thing that I expected that by the end of 2024, that bubble will burst because people will realize, okay, that the costs are completely out of control, the ROI is not there, and et cetera, et cetera. But the one thing that happened that I think none of us anticipated is, of course, Trump. To me, that has changed everything. Because kind of like with crypto, the crypto bubble basically blew up in 2022. And then, you know, nobody was talking about crypto. Yeah, people were working on blockchain. Blockchain as a tech, again, really cool tech. Yeah. It's fantastic. But the whole crypto and the NFT nonsense, it kind of died away, didn't it, for a couple of years? Trump came in. What happened to crypto? Boom. It got again, it's all fake inflation, right? By the way, it's not real interest from investors. It was a lot of kind of money laundering thing going on. Nobody knows what's going on. But definitely the Trump family are absolutely in the middle of it. And now, effectively, they turned AI into a meme bubble. And the amount of money that they're throwing at it right now is it's truly absurd. I've never seen anything like this before. So now, this bubble turned into something else. I've never seen this. You know, I know people like to compare it to the dot-com bubble or whatever. I disagree, actually. I don't think it is. I would have said it was a dot-com bubble by the end, before Trump got elected. That would have, you know, and by that point, it wasn't even as bad as the dot-com bubble, but it would have been painful for some investors. But now, oh my goodness, I mean, this is, I would combine that with the dot-com bubble and the 2008 financial crash, purely because of the amount of money that's been thrown into data centers. Again, I'm not against data centers. We need data centers. Like I said, we need more compute, but the amount of, like the number of data centers that they want to build, it's absurd. Yeah, it's like now they're talking about sending data centers to space. I'm like, what? It's like, what are you talking about? So I think as a bubble, it's bad. So now it's not just a technological issue. It's a financial issue. So you combine these two things and you've got somebody like Trump who if the bubble explodes right now, I don't think it will explode the way we think it will. I think what's going to happen, like the investors are already jittery. Something is going to pop it, but it's not going to be a full pop because what will happen, Trump will jump in because he doesn't like the markets looking bad, quote unquote, as he says it. So there will be some kind of bailout. OpenAI, at the time of this recording, they were already kind of talking about, oh, we kind of need government funds. You know, the CFO recently was saying that she expects some kind of government funds because the work that they're doing is so important. I'm like, yeah. That's called bailout, right? And then, like, he will bail them out for sure. I think some companies will die as a result of that. Even companies, maybe, I mean, dare I say it, like Perplexity, I think they're going to die unless somebody acquires them. But what they're going to happen, what they're going to drag it even further. And I think the ultimate bubble explosion, probably now, I'm in my head, I think, like, so this is going to be the first part of the bubble exploding, but they'll bail it out. More money will be spent. And I think maybe, depending on what happens in the next elections, which is like the midterms, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert in political in American politics, whether that would have any impact on how Trump behaves himself or not. But definitely once the Trump's presidency ends, I think the bubble will explode and it will be really bad. So I think we're going to go through some serious pain for the next 3 years, which is horrendous.
So, I mean, if you're one of those investors, you're either doubling down and then you've got to bail out in that time, right? Or you're, you know, or you're supporting the next Trump, you know, successor, basically. You're kind of like, how can I ride this into the future, maybe? But what I find interesting about everything you said is it doesn't really demonstrate any real impact to us, right? Like, we haven't really talked much about, you know, other than what you were saying before and why you got into AI in the first place, is it feels like we are being sold this thing that, like you were saying, we're not seeing the ROI. We're not seeing the benefit that actually is, you know, means that we need to spend this much money on and land and water, electricity, and all these resources on more data centers, more compute for this thing. And it's like, do you have a sense of like why we're even chasing down, like, or why these big companies are chasing down this amount of investment, amount of kind of massive worldwide like data. I like it to, I don't know if you're a science fiction fan, but the Foundation series, right, by Isaac Asimov has Trantor, right? And Trantor is like the admin center of the whole dynasty, the kind of empire, and it's just this planet covered, like completely covered in structure, and it's like, do we want Trantor? Like, what are we doing, guys? Like, I don't know if that's like, is that a good idea? I don't know.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's who's driving it, because from the words, like, certainly the work that we've done with Nebula, the reason we launched Nebula in 2019, which is my company, although now I'm kind of dismantling it. I want to kind of move it into the nonprofit. We can talk about that later if you want. But the whole point of Nebula generally as a company is that we wanted to guide all of the decision makers and enterprises and organizations in terms of what AI can and cannot do. What does that mean? Why would you need AI in the first place? What's the ROI? And the question was always about, okay, it's because you feel you've got a problem and you think AI can solve that problem. Well, then the first question has to be, well, why do you have that problem in the first place? Why do you think AI is the solution? And once you kind of start asking these questions, I mean, which is basically what data science is about, because it's about connecting the dots. You look at the problems within the enterprise. Of course, you look at the data around that. The data is really, literally is the blueprint of everything, isn't it? Like, that's the world that we live in today.
Yeah.
And what I try to do, AI is fantastic at basically plugging these gaps, you know, where you've got the gaps that cause these problems. Well, do you think AI can solve that problem, or can a human solve that problem? And the question when it comes to AI in humans kind of has to go back to robotics in humans. Like, why do we need robots? Because we created robots so that they can do the things that humans can never ever do. For example, we can easily send robots to Mars. To send a human to Mars, you need to, first it costs a crazy amount of money because you have to have a living ecosystem. You have to provide safety, et cetera, et cetera. But with a robot, you don't need to do that. But more importantly, you can design a robot to do things like, you know, to be able to navigate through the terrains, which is the reason why I see humanoids as the most useless robots ever, because they're literally a replica of a human. That's like, that kind of defies the whole purpose of robotics. But AI is exactly the same. I mean, we use AI. I mean, I mentioned earlier about the decoding of animal genomes and the human genomes. Now, again, the AI wasn't used to replace geneticists, but rather to help geneticists to conduct calculations, like multi-billion calculations that otherwise it was impossible without the AI. But you still had to have the geneticists, you know?
Yeah.
That's AI. So
and you're alluding to that with Google DeepMind and the kind of protein folding and all these things that we've applied this AI technique and it wasn't really a thing before and now it's a thing and it's like go nuts, guys. Yeah. So it's like things like that, which I concur. I feel like we could spend a lot more time doing things which aren't possible without the technology instead of replacing people or, you know, doing that stuff.
But that's the thing. It's like, to me, that's why it goes back to the narratives that I'm challenging, because, I mean, I had a guest on my podcast, was Dr. Jeffrey Funk. So he was one of the people that actually predicted the bubble like way before everybody else. Like, he even wrote the whole book about it, like in, I think, early 2024. Mm. So we actually launched... our discussion before, like, so now everybody's talking about AI bubbles, but him and I were, I think we're probably the first video on YouTube, like, hence it's super viral on YouTube. That it's the only thing I have viral, which is like, yeah.
Are we just going to agree that there is a bubble? Because obviously I was alluding to the fact that there could be this thing that we're calling a bubble. Is that, do you have like a, yes, this is an AI bubble?
Oh, or... yeah. Yeah, it's a bubble. The question is, I think the question should not be whether it's a bubble or not. I think, you know, those of us involved in the field, we've established it was a bubble, like I said, in 2024, like early 2024, right? But the question was, like, for me at least, it's like, when what does the bubble burst look like? Because ultimately, this is when you start seeing the maturity of the technology, right? Like, as I said earlier, this is where the grown-ups start to take over. So with the dot-com bubble, yeah, it blew up and, you know, we had all the useless websites dying away or whatever. But then eventually we started, you know, the whole world started to understand, okay, what is it that we can really achieve with the internet? And here we are.
Yeah.
So the same thing can happen with AI. But then AI is a little bit different because AI has been around for a long time, for 70 years. It's not even, the internet was new, but AI is not new. And I think like everything that we see today with AI, when people talk about, oh, we've got this new AI thing, actually, there's nothing new. It's literally the same thing. The transformer technology, for those who probably don't know what transformer is, the T bit of GPT, it's the transformer technology, which is literally at the heart of all generative AI market, right? That was actually invented by Google. And that was back in 2015, I think, or 2014. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. And they actually developed it because they were actually facing a similar problem that, funnily enough, my company was facing at the time, that would just makes it more efficient for you to be able to combine different corpuses of text, of text. For example, the problem we had with my company, for instance, like, because it was science-based. So the problem with science is that you've got multiple different fields. So you have multiple dictionaries. So you would have dictionary for, say, physics, dictionary for biology, dictionary for whatever, right? And normally what people would be doing at the time, they would have an AI model for each one. And we were saying, well, actually, no, you should have one AI model that can bring them all together. But then how do you bring them all together? That, like, there would be a lot of redundancies. So that creates a big problem. And the same problem Google had with Google Translate. Because the problem that Google had with Google Translate, and it used to be quite crap at the time, where it would have to translate one language to, let's say if it wanted to translate, say, German to Mandarin, it would have to translate German to English, then English to Mandarin. It was never a direct translation. So they basically tried to figure out, well, how do we combine all these dictionaries in a way so that we don't have to go through all that weird, convoluted approach to translate language? They came up with the transformer technology. Now, obviously, as is the case with all big companies, they didn't have the foresight to see how far they can go with that. Obviously, OpenAI did, so kudos to them. But the point I'm making here, that everything that you see here is not new. So to me, again, even though it's a bubble, bubbles tend to happen with new things. You know, blockchain was new. The internet was new. Yeah. AI is not new. Like I said, AI has been around for 70 years. So
in theory, it's a bubble. I suppose it's probably generative AI bubble. But this is why I am very upset with this whole situation, because when people talk about AI, they really mean generative AI. But unfortunately now, it has masked and kind of painted that picture that the whole AI is generative AI. So therefore, the bubble is even bigger. So my concern, so even though it's a bubble, but I think it's the bubble that will impact the entire AI industry, because the problem is it's going to be trust. If people hear the term AI, they won't care that, I'm not talking about generative AI. I'm talking about, I don't know, manufacturer's AI. Nope, it's AI. We don't trust it. That is bad. That's why it's a bubble now. You see, so it's a bubble that is caused not just by excitement, but a complete misunderstanding of what AI is, but also the level of, I don't know if I should legally say this, but I would almost say lies by the likes of Elon Musk, Sam Altman, everybody involved in AI, when they were saying that, oh, we're building AGI. The AGI is the thing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Even though, again, AGI is not a new concept, but we've been trying to do AGI for years. Like, when I say we, I mean like as in the tech sector. And it never happened because it's just not possible. But they kept on going on about it. And they always use AGI as the excuse to release products that has nothing to do with AGI, like Sora. What on earth is Sora? What's Sora got to do with AGI or intelligence? But this is the problem. It's like they're just over inflating these crazy expectations. And because people don't understand what AI is, going back to my original point, and notice as well that what these guys are doing, they're always using Hollywood references. Like Elon Musk likes to say, I want to build like R2-D2. Good luck, ain't going to happen because that's fantasy. Sam Altman obviously talks about, you know, remember when they released, I can't remember which GPT, when they released the speech capability and he started talking about her from the movie.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's not it. That's not real. But this is how people connect with AI, because they don't know. All they know is what they see in Hollywood. And these guys are saying, well, guess what? You know what you've seen in Hollywood? This is what we're building. And people like me and you, who know the reality, were like actually saying, no, that's not real. Yeah. That can't happen. It won't happen. And this is the issue. I think that's why it's a bubble, but it's a bubble based on complete lies, fluff, fantasy, rather than new technology. That's why I said it's unprecedented. It's a bubble, but we've never been through this before. I have no idea how this is going to end. I know is it's going to be a disaster, for sure.
I like the reference to science fiction, because science fiction often takes a dramatic, often catastrophic view of these sorts of technologies. Mm. But a lot of the time, it's very rare, right, to find a good example of AI use where things went well, people were happy about it, and it isn't like everything. And I think, like what you were saying before, it's like they're being sold as this thing will revolutionize everything. And it's very hard to contextualize that. And I don't think, and I think they probably find it hard to contextualize that as well. It's like, how does everything suddenly change? And I think with an upheaval, even like you say, if it's not going to happen, then, you know, we're just spending this money and it's going to be a massive bubble. But even if it does happen, like that's going to be an unprecedented change that we probably won't be able to deal with as a social society, how can we change overnight to this other mode of operating without it going really badly, right? Essentially. So I find that it feels odd to me that the people are actively trying to do this thing, which is probably definitely going to be bad. And it's not necessarily going to be bad for the reasons they think it's, you know, that other people think it's going to be bad. It's just like, we're just not set up for this, guys. You know what I mean? Like the economics of it won't work necessarily. You know, do we want to be ruled? You know, I don't know, like what's the outcome here? Are you going to be some sort of like, ruler of the world with this AI thing? Is the AI going to rule everyone? You know, do we even want any of this? And the difficult thing is to go, well, out of all of these options, you're probably thinking that you're going to be in control of this thing that can do anything. And at that point, it makes you this super god person with this powerful AI. And it's like, do we want that? Like, you know, any which way you cut it, it's like, I don't know, guys. I don't think this is a good idea. Like, maybe I'm not like being, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, as they say. Like,
yeah,
I think there's so many good things, like you were saying, that we can produce with this technologies, and it is a set of technologies. At the moment, when people say AI, it's probably just generative AI that they're talking about, and a subset of generative AI, which is probably image generation, which is some Stable Diffusion and language model strapped together. And you know what I mean? There's all these things that combinate into what we're actually talking, like the actual thing we're talking about, and not magic, right? When you say AI, it's basically like all bets are off. Like, it's just something that I actually can't describe. But like, this is a thing. It uses loads of compute. Why are we, like, I guess one of my other questions is like, why do we need all these data centers? Like, we've got models, right? So why do we need all these more? Why do we need more? Why? You know, is it for this AGI dream, or do we actually need, like, so I've had a little mini rant, so you can.
No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, like, it kind of, you mentioned an interesting point about that AI can revolutionize everything. Now, firstly, what do you mean by everything? And secondly, why do we need to revolutionize everything? What's wrong with everything? That's the key question. What I did with businesses, right? It's like, okay, you say you've got a problem, you think AI can solve that problem. Well, firstly, why do you have that problem in the first place? But then when you ask people, okay, what are the problems that you're dealing with? Automatically, people, like, actually the argument that I've been making for years, in fact, I say this on the podcast quite a lot, that to me, AI is involved in what I see as the five pillars of society, the things that we all care about, regardless of your politics or background. We all care about those five things, and that is finance, healthcare, education, the environment, and our identity, right? So look at the problems in these things. I think you can see a lot of problems there already, right? So, okay. Yep. Can AI solve some of these problems? So, for example, if it's healthcare, what are the problems that we have in healthcare? There's a lot of inefficiencies, and it's mostly admin. So can we use AI to get rid of the admin stuff? And in fact, way back in the day, like because I was a biomedical scientist at the time, and I worked at the hospital. So basically, I was already thinking about AI, and I was talking to nurses and doctors and stuff. And all of them at the time, and that was like in the early 2000s. So people already were thinking about AI, or how do you get rid of the paperwork? And literally the thing that never left my mind, especially the nurses, when they were saying, if there's anything that could get rid of the paperwork, that would be amazing. Because then as a nurse, I can do what I need to do and what I enjoy doing. And that's literally helping patients, interacting with patients, working with patients. I don't have to worry about the paperwork. You see, this is where AI is fantastic. Yeah. But then when you have the people, like the Musks of this world, say, well, we can create AI that would replace nurses. Now, firstly, why do you want to replace nurses? What are the problems with nurses? There aren't any problems with nurses, right? Now, somebody said, well, maybe some nurses are not very nice people. Well, they aren't nice people in everything, everywhere, right?
I mean, if you're in the American system, maybe the medical environment's very different, right? So it's like a more privatized situation. So in the UK, we obviously have the NHS, and in different countries, they have different kind of versions of that privatization to state kind of funded stuff. So I think in the UK, we'd probably say, no, we want more nurses. But in the US, you've got this profit making thing
exactly
going on.
Well, that was actually I was coming to that. I think that profit. Well, that's the thing, because you see. Because there are two issues here. And going back to Jeffrey Funk, he said it perfectly, I think, when we had that discussion. He said that the problem with these people that go on about that they want to replace doctors or humans, they haven't got a clue how these things work, right? It's like, I always find it funny, especially when you hear somebody like Altman, but to be fair to him, loads of them were saying the same thing for years. When they say things like, oh, AI can cure cancer. Now, remember I said at the beginning, like I'm so lucky in terms of like, I know the right things at the right time. As a biomedical scientist, you know what my major is? Oncogenomics, the genetics of cancer. So when I hear people say to me, oh, AI can cure cancer, my first response would be like, oh, really? Show me how.
Yeah.
And they never do. Show me the data. Show me their papers. How can you, tell me, explain that to me. Mm. And they can't. And the issue is these people, they haven't got a clue how work works, basically. That's how Jeff put it at the time. He's like, they don't understand work, because what he has done, which I thought was fascinating, because his expertise in robotics, and like, for like 40 years ago, he was basically trying to, or rather he was figuring out what kind of, how do you enhance work in your particular jobs with robotics? But in order for you to do that, you need to understand the nature of the job first, right?
Yeah.
Going back to, which is very similar to what I said in terms of the business, if you've got a problem in your business, or what are the causes of the problem, which means you have to understand all of the aspects of your business model and et cetera. So you have to look at the whole picture. But when these people go on about, oh, let's replace doctors. Well, do you know how a doctor works? And obviously they don't, because when you ask them these questions, they can't answer it. And that's the thing. They think that because they're really good at computer science, and we did see that, I see this a lot in Google campus, to be honest, where they're really clever at maths or really clever at engineering. So they think, oh, because I'm so clever at these things, I can do anything. I can do graphics design. I can do teaching, because how hard could it be? And that kind of goes back to, I think, our societal interpretation of intelligence, which kind of, I mean, you and I should talked about that, didn't we, in the first episode four years ago, about what intelligence means, right? And I think there's this perception that if you're good at maths or good at engineering, you're clever. And that's it. But if you're good at music, good at arts, who cares about that? But the reality is, if you're intelligent at maths, you're intelligent at maths. You take that person out of maths, they're a complete utter idiot. Best example of that, of course, is Sheldon Cooper, right? I mean, for those who don't know, that's a show from from Big Bang Theory. So he's a physics genius, a prodigy. But you take him out of that world, the guy's a complete numpty. But these guys are the same, right? So I'm not saying that they're stupid, right? I'm never, I don't attack people in that way. But stay in your lane, like, with all due respect, right? Shut the hell up when it comes to things that you don't understand. Like, I say very openly that I'm absolute Luddite when it comes to physics, even though I enjoy reading quantum physics and astrophysics. But I'm not going to get anywhere near that. People talk about quantum computing. Good for you. I'm not getting there, because I know nothing about it. I'm honest about it. But when you have these guys that go on about, they try to be clever, they try to have this persona that they're geniuses. A genius doesn't know everything. A genius actually knows that they're really good at that one thing. Like Einstein, he knew he was the best in physics, but then he figured out ways. Well, how do you apply some of these areas in real world? But he would still ask the questions. Well, but look, I don't know how this works. I think physics could be applied in this area, but let me work with other experts in this area to help me understand. I mean, this is how intelligence works. So, and this goes back to the point that about control, like who wants to control what? And frankly, the way I see it, they're replacing people. Like, you see companies these days that they're replacing thousands of workers. That's not because AI is capable of doing the work. It's because it's cheaper. It's all about profit. So when it comes to control, to me, it's not the AI that is going to control it. The AI can't do anything. AI has, I mean, we're nowhere near this sort of the AI that we see in all these sci-fi movies, that they have this conscious belief that they can take over the world, or they need to take over the world. That does not exist. But what people who have, if you like, who are holding the switch, as it were, right? Holding the keys. They're the ones that can manipulate knowledge. So, you know, the five things that I talked about, right? They can manipulate education. And we're seeing that in America already. They can absolutely manipulate the common narrative of people. It's, oh, AI is better than you, therefore we can fire you. They don't care about the positive outcome of that, because customer service apparently is not important anymore. So if it's crap, fine. So long as we're still we can save like X thousands of dollars per person. I mean, and this is the argument that I always like to make, that, you know, humanoids, for example, the most useless robots ever. But the only reason they would use a humanoid instead of a human, because a humanoid, using Elon Musk's figures, costs, what, $30,000 or whatever it is? But you pay that only once. An employee would cost the company $30,000 per year. Now, can the humanoid do the same thing as a human? No. But at least you don't have to pay $30,000 every year. You see what I'm saying? So this is what we're seeing right now.
I would probably say that you'd probably buy, like, in reality, right? Like, I'm seeing this play out, and I'm like, okay, I bought my humanoid, and it's like okay, I'm going to make it like fold, like notoriously hard problems for robots, like folding clothes, like something very easy for a human, but extremely difficult for robotics. I've got this folding clothes bot, and it breaks down sometimes and it needs updating. And I've got a subscription to my fleet of, so it probably isn't a once and done situation, I would say as well. Cause like, you have cars, they have fuel, they have to be, you know, uptake, you know, have to fix things. Like, I just don't believe that's even the case anyway of like how that would work.
But there's also the argument that they make, I mean, and I feel it's quite sinister. And actually, by the way, there are other sinister reasons in my view. But one of the sinister arguments that they make is that, oh, humans need holidays. Humans need to have a break and stuff. These robots don't have to. You know what I'm saying? It's like they really want like that 24-hour workforce that never stops.
Yeah.
Now, again, nothing wrong with that, right? If a robot can do it, great. I mean, that's the whole point of manufacturing, right? That's how it all started. But generally speaking, it's like what I see today is there's this very anti-human rhetoric. Which is like 10 years ago, like certainly I can speak from what we had within the Google ecosystem. Nobody was talking about that. None of us. Like even AGI was not a thing. No one talked about AGI. Like, you know, I read a few papers about that or whatever. I was like, yeah, good luck with that. But generally people were like, you know, like DeepMind, they were focusing on, you know, for material science at the time, I think. In my case, we're focusing on fighting misinformation. Loads of companies there, they were trying to figure out how to enhance encryption data with AI, mostly because they wanted to deal with the dangers of quantum computing that can decrypt the entire blockchain, for example, within like seconds or minutes or whatever. So how can we enhance the algorithms for encryption algorithms with AI? So there's like real problems, right? But nobody was talking about, oh, we want to replace humans. But there's like, certainly, again, from 2023, I think, you started this all that talk about how do we replace artists? How do we replace authors? How do we replace designers? I'm like, why? What? Why? And the only reason is that they don't want to pay people to do the work. That's it. Yeah. It's as simple as that. But the other thing, and again, I did talk a lot about that before, is that there is a very aggressive attempt now to grab as much data as possible. Because over the years, the only way all these companies, big tech companies, were getting data was through social media. Now, that's a lot of data. But the problem with social media is the fact that it's really, you know, whatever you post online, you've got the full control of that because you choose what you want to post. You can add the persona, like as we see on Instagram. Most of these influencers are fake, right? So it's like, I can pretend to be whatever I want to be or whatever and you know, have that conversation. But you could still generally figure out what's the general public sentiment towards a particular topic or politics, whatever. So it's a lot of data, but it's not enough. What we're seeing right now for the first time in history, and this is where ChatGPT, and we're seeing that rise of psychosis, AI psychosis, so-called, is that for the first time in history, people are sharing very, very deep thoughts, ideas, their true personality with these chatbots. And what people don't realize, we have access to that. Like, I mean, you might say, well, Tim, surely people are not going to be reading all these lines one by one. It's not about whether people can access it. There's a record of every prompt that you generate, right? And we can use AI to start going through all of that to say, well, okay, what do people talk about? What's the interesting thing? That's never happened. And that's sort of people's real thoughts. It's not a facade, right? And the other sinister thing with humanoids, especially humanoids that are designed for, you know, for households or whatever. I don't know if you saw that new humanoid that came out. I forgot what it was called. The one that is looks like one of those Apple speakers. You know, it's like it's got cloth all over the place. It looks very cute.
And
they were saying that if it doesn't work, somebody in the call center will have full access to that robot and they can scan your entire house. But guess what? That's the whole point. They want to have access to the inside of your home.
Your data.
In fact,
Exactly.
So basically now they want to have direct access to your thoughts, to your personality. They want to have access to your living environment, your working environment. That's an unprecedented data breach in my view. Like the fact that they really want to have access to your private life in this way, it's crazy. And again, talking about control, Larry Ellison, who briefly was the richest man in the world for like, what was it, 2 days or something? But he's the founder of Oracle. And of course, he's been in the news a lot. In fact, I even had the journalist that kind of broke that news about his relationship with Tony Blair and Tony Blair Institute. But he said it publicly recently that to him, he was like, and he said it as if it's a great thing. Imagine if we all have data on people, every single person, and we make sure that everybody behaves themselves. What are we talking about here? Again, where is the AI here? Where is the AI? What's this got to do with AI? This is the key point. So for me, the way I see it, going back to that five pillars that I talked about, if you have direct access to people's way of thinking and people's way of life in those five areas, people's identity, right? Their healthcare. Obviously, Palantir in the UK is trying to get access to all of our data in NHS data. You know, if they have access to the education, they can manipulate education. You are controlling people. You don't need AI for that. These are the people behind the AI, basically masquerading that it's an AI innovation. But in fact, it's an attempt to aggressively grab as much of your data as possible. That way you can quote unquote behave yourself. This is what the AI control looks like. It has nothing to do with AI. It's the people behind the AI.
Well, it feels like if the bubble bursts, there's going to be a land grab for what the data is available, you know, and who controls the data and what data is coming in still from whatever is accessible in people's homes, their phones, their robots, you know, whatever it is. That might be an interesting kind of like upshot of this whole thing, is that we get left in, you know, when the dust settles, we've just data oligarchies, I guess, let's call them.
Maybe that's why they want the data centers, because it's all centralized, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, this is why for me, again, there are a few of us out there that basically we're calling for decentralized data. Like, so basically it's the, and decentralized AI. And again, this is what Apple is doing. You know, so the fact that all of the AI is on your phone, no one can access it. That, to me, that's the future. And also from the efficiency and cost perspective, it makes sense because, you know, if you as a customer, you buy the phone, well, you're paying for it. You've paid already for the AI. That's the ROI, which is the reason why I said before, like, you know, for you to offer consumers access to AI, well, somebody has to pay the bill, right?
Yeah.
And Apple obviously saying, well, actually, well, we're not paying the bill. The user will pay the bill, but the user has it on their phone. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. That's how it's supposed to be. But I think you asked earlier as well, what's the point of all these data centers? That's a very good question. What is the point of all these data centers? And I think if you look at what Larry Ellison is saying, I think that gives you the answer. That's what the data centers are for. It's nothing to do with, let's give people access to AI. It's, you need to store the data somewhere. And there you go. It's that centralized database of people.
Yeah, I feel like, for me, trying to make sense out of that situation, it's like like you said, like it's just a storage system for this mountains and mountains of data that is going to be produced, is currently being produced, and it's needs to go somewhere, needs to be computed, and needs to have something done to it to make it useful. Mm. But also, it's like, you know, there's this idea that these AI tools are going to keep getting better with more data and more compute as well. So there's this, like, you know, we've been talking about the bubble, but there's also this idea of the plateau, right? Of we're going to throw more compute and more data at one of these generative models, and it's going to keep getting better forever, right? It's going to be better in terms of it can do maths better, it can do human responses better, it can do language translation better, summarization better, like whatever task that you're trying to actually test it on. And I just don't, I like, I feel, it feels intuitive to me that that isn't the case, that these things are just going to always get better. And especially when you consider that you're now polluting your own data with stuff that you produced from the same models, right? So when people were like, you know, I don't know if people know this, but, you know, you could send emails which are just all AI generated, right? Or you could create an AI generated image, or you could create an AI generated website. And then therefore, at the end, you're just going to get this like snake that eats itself situation where you're polluting your good data, whatever that means, with synthetic data, and you get this general gradual degrading because it's like, oh, well, I'm listening to myself over and over like a big echo, right? It's just gonna slowly degrade over time. But so it's like, it feels like that people are like, are we chasing something which is actually infeasible and doesn't really make any money, doesn't really help us in any way, and is making like all these data centers and stuff like that, like in places that maybe we don't need them, or like is a waste of money and time and not solving any climate issues? And or are we going to magically make this AGI thing which is going to solve all of our you know what I mean? It's just like, that's far fetched than what is actually the case at the moment, where you just, it's just not actually providing any benefit, you know?
Well, hence it's so, a bubble, I mean, isn't it? It's like, it's basically, you know, going back to, you know, the .com, sort of the best example of the .com bubble, of course, was pets.com, isn't it? So that, so this is basically multiples of pets.com in one thing. But the other thing, actually, I just had a thought, actually, because one of the things that I always hear about, and again, it just suggests to me that people just don't know what they're talking about. It's like when they say, well, actually, the infrastructure is great. Like if you remember, with the .com bubble, a lot of companies that actually produced the, or rather built the fiber optics or whatever, they all went out of business. But the fiber optics were, you know, they still served their purpose for decades or whatever. Or that AI is kind of like railway, or the data centers are like railway. I'm like, actually, no, it's not. No, it's not. Because what is the core element of all these data centers? The microchips. Microchips don't last for decades. Now, you're a gamer. We're both gamers, right? I use NVIDIA, right? Now, which smart gamer would ever go to the market to say, you know what, I want to buy an NVIDIA microchip that is 10 years old? No one.
It's now redundant, right? So you're just like,
absolutely.
Well, yeah. It doesn't work.
And the thing is, like, looking at this, there's different research that shows that basically, like, all of those microchips right now, their lifespan, because obviously the compute is so intense with these models, the lifespan of these microchips is 3 to 5 years. So let's say all these data centers spent all of that money. Now, NVIDIA, of course, by the way, I mean, I don't agree that people kind of say NVIDIA is the one that's going to lose out. I don't understand. They make loads of money, excuse my language, but they are absolutely laughing to the bank, and kudos to them. They've got the technology, they've got the microchips, they hacked up the price. I mean, that's what you do, right? In the bubble as a business, they're not losing anything. They'll be fine, right? Because let's say if the bubble bursts, NVIDIA will be absolutely fine. I mean, I don't believe anything would happen to NVIDIA. But people who are building, like, because there are companies that are taking loads of loans and stuff to build these data centers, and they're basically, quote unquote, investing in these microchips. Well, what will happen after 3 or 5 years? Who's going to pay for the microchips that don't work anymore, or they're not particularly useful anymore? So this idea that it's a long-term investment is complete for the birds, because it's like, it's not that, like the railway. The railway, it did last for centuries or whatever. But microchips don't last for centuries. And this is, again, it's that narrative that people just don't get it. It's like, AI is like fire. No, it's not like fire, right? Fire is something that we've done for millennia, right? Again, microchips don't do that. And it's frustrating. You can tell that I'm frustrated with this, because it's the whole thing is just led by complete misleading information, or information made by either grifters or incompetent people, or people who are not really, you know, who are not experts in the field. They're the ones who are doing all the talking, which is the reason why I started my podcast And that's not to promote the podcast, but it's more like to make the point. Like the mission of the podcast, where I'm it's very simple. Like I want to bring real experts out of the clickbait shadows, because everything that we have right now it's all meme, clickbaity garbage that is controlling the entire AI narratives. So much so that governments listen to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have people in I have sources now, Ben. I'm a journalist, apparently. It's like, what? But I have people in government, in the UK government, that told me that there are people in government and government departments who, mind you, right? They are the ones who control policy. Yeah. They think AI was invented 3 years ago. Riddle me that, well, man.
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously talking about a very specific thing, which is not what AI yeah. is or should be, or you know what I mean? I'm interested in, like, obviously you got your podcast. I was on a year ago, and we had a chat, and it was really nice to air my frustrations as well. And I was wondering what is it that you're trying to achieve from the kind of not-for-profit foundation thing that you're trying to do, and is there anything that we haven't talked about in this kind of AI bubble situation that you want to briefly touch on before we finish?
Well, I think that because one of the key questions I get a lot these days, and this is kind of a typical thing you see in the deep tech, because I'm basically a deep tech entrepreneur, so it's all about research and development. So basically, people like me, we talk about the things before everybody else is talking about it, right? So like I said, we talked about the bubble before everybody else started talking about the bubble. So right now, the talking point that we have is what happens after the bubble. Whatever that bubble explosion looks like, I think we all agree that the consequences of the explosion is pretty catastrophic. There'll be financial meltdown, a lot of money lost. So much so, I mean, sometimes I can get a bit hyperbolic about it. I'm thinking it's even risky to entrepreneurship, because if entrepreneurs can't get money from VCs that lost all the money, how do they start a business, right? So for me, this is the question. It's like, what happens after the bubble? How do we clean up the mess? So for me, this is my mindset these days. It's the post-AI bubble cleanup. And that's basically, that's the billion-dollar question. It's because it's so many things. I think the problem right now, certainly from the commercial point of view, which is the reason why I want to do the non-profit side of things, is that the trust in AI will collapse. I think right now it's probably already collapsing. Nobody can say anything good about AI, right? So basically, I feel that if we can find a way to basically prioritize solving the problems that are caused by AI. So in my case, I want to look into how do we reverse or find ways to solve the problem of this AI psychosis. So, I mean, there's a lot of research out there that shows that hundreds of thousands of people have developed pretty horrific mental health problems from generative AI. So how do we solve that? So people talk about the cause and the outcome. Well, what's in between? So that's what my for-profit is going to be doing. Like, we want to look at how do we solve that problem. And of course, I don't believe any VC would invest in that because they don't care. So it has to be government funded, because governments will have to figure out a way to fix that mess, because people will vote the crap out of them, like we've seen right now in New York. I mean, we're going to see a lot of that post the bubble for sure. People got to absolutely retaliate against whatever government they have, because the economic consequences are quite obvious. So that's basically what I'm looking at. It's like, how do we solve, you know, how do we clean up the mess, the mental health mess? Obviously, the data, what will happen to the data, like you alluded to, who's going to access that data, and basically campaign for proper regulations once and for all, because we've been talking about this regulation for bloody forever and nobody's done anything.
I just remembered a question to ask you earlier, but I'll save that for another time.
But fair enough.
if you were gonna, because it's really interesting, you were talking about the psychosis side of things, and our next episode is actually, we're talking about AI and relationships and socializing AI that connection. So if there was one thing that you could advise just a general listener, what would you advise them to do if they were if they were using this technology?
Not to fall for the praise, because that's what it's doing right now. You know, actually, I was experimenting with it yesterday, funnily enough. I think it was with ChatGPT, where I was asking it very specific questions. Like, okay, what was it about, actually? It was to do with the, what's to do with the environment? Like, there was something that came out yesterday. Oh, my God.
The cop, is on at the moment, yeah.
Yeah, but I asked it the question. It was a very, very specific question, right? Almost like a yes or no question. Straight away said, oh, this is such an amazing question. Well done for thinking about it. I'm like, huh? What are you doing? Like, yeah. This is what hooks people in. You know, it's that self-praising, non-stop praise. And because we live in a world where people are stressed all the time for good reasons, right? Somehow that kind of creates this comfort zone in your head that you just want to talk to somebody that is always praising you. So my advice is just be careful with that. I mean, because that you can very easily fall for that. I mean, we all do. We're all humans. We all have our cognitive biases, etc. So just watch out for that. Yeah. Don't allow ChatGPT to kind of fuel your cognitive bias.
I mean, Tim, I think that you're amazing, and I think that's a really good answer to, like, just the best person, actually, just in the world. And I think,
you're so kind. I didn't pay Ben to say that. I swear, I didn't pay him.
No, you're an awful. No, thank you so much for your time, and I'm definitely going to speak to you soon. As always, keep up the good work, and if people find you, follow you, interact with you, how do they do that?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. If you just look up Tim Elshaik, you should be able to find me easily. You can Google me as well. But if you want to check me out, just check out the podcast, which is ceoretort.com. So that basically takes you to my podcast, my newsletter. There's nothing else. Yeah, that's it. All the good stuff is there.
Okay, cool. Thank you for your time, Tim.
Thanks so much, Ben.
Hi, and welcome to the end of the podcast. Thanks again for Tim for coming on for the second time. If you'd like to find more about Tim, you can go to CEO Retort, or you can find his episode 63 of the Machine Ethics Podcast, AI Readiness. Obviously, some episodes are a product of their time, and I feel like there's a lot of conversation around the kind of AI hype at the moment. So if you're listening to this in the future, can you message back and tell us what happened, okay? I also really like the idea that hadn't necessarily come off or come over before, this idea of the AI oligarchy and this kind of like new land grab for all this data, all this kind of very, very sensitive stuff that we are prompting to these systems in a way that we don't normally interact with the internet, and what is happening to that data and who has that data, keeps it, has ownership over it, and how valuable that is something that I haven't seen talked about enough in the work that I've seen. So it's something that we should probably be mindful about, as well as the security aspect of that as well, and privacy stuff. So if you want to talk about that, do get in contact. Thank you very much for listening. Obviously, go to machine-ethics.net for more episodes from us. And if you can, you can support us, patreon.com/machineethics. And hopefully see you next time.